You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Another win for your Philadelphia 76ers. A 20-point win over the Houston Rockets tonight, 133-113. Joel Embiid continuing to dominate, another 30-10-10 night. We'll get into the specifics in a second. I got Jackson Frank on the line. We're going to cover this game from a few angles. And then Jackson actually wrote a pretty awesome piece about how the Sixers were able to beat the two best in the NBA, the Golden State Warriors and the Brooklyn Nets last week. So Jackson, how you doing? Let's just start there.
I'm doing a lot better than I was about a week ago when I was down with illness. I'm glad to be back watching Sixers games live and not a replay and be able to interact with everyone at Liberty Ballers and all the Sixers fans on Twitter. So I can't complain. And it was there are worse games to come back to than that one, when Joel is awesome and Furkan is fun, and we'll get into it. But I'm doing pretty well, all things considered.
So you're confirming that you are back from health and safety protocols?
I almost am. I'm doing the full 10-day quarantine. I would say health-wise, I am basically about 90%, but
because we love percentages on these
podcasts. Yeah, my quarantine doesn't end until Wednesday afternoon, so I'm playing it safe, staying home. But if I needed to play basketball or something, I could definitely do it today. But yeah, I think you know, based on what Joel told us, my bout with COVID was a little less arduous than his. But also, I don't have to go play basketball for 35 minutes 4 days a week, so it makes it easier for me. So I guess I am cleared from the health part. Maybe the safety part, I'm still in the protocols, but I am good health-wise now.
Nice. Let's start with the big man. Joel continuing to dominate. This is a growing theme that we really, really enjoy. He had a monster December, and he's continuing with the first game of the new year, 31-15-10 in 30 minutes. Like, what else can we say about this man? Other than, DeMar DeRozan, sorry, step aside, buddy. Joel was the December Eastern Conference Player of the Month. I'm sorry, step away, step aside.
I mean, I guess you got to give DeMar his credit, right, for those two game winners. That helps your case a little bit for Player of the Week. But
no, you don't.
I mean, I think it's fair, right? I mean, those shots were pretty ridiculous, right? I think you can't go wrong, right? Which, right, is a good problem to have, in my opinion. You have two guys playing.
All right. We're officially DeMar DeRozan standing on this podcast. God damn it.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, with Joel, I think it's interesting. I was talking with someone recently about his play, and like, obviously, this is not what I'm saying at all, but it seemed like whatever happened, whatever time he took off because he was dealing with COVID, rejuvenated him in some way. I don't know what it was. But, you know, before that, he wasn't moving as spryly. He wasn't getting the quality of shots we saw last year. He wasn't getting as deep a position as we were accustomed to. And he's come back in these last 5 weeks. And just, you know, outside of those couple of stinkers against, you know, Orlando in that first Boston game, just been on an absolute tear. I think two or three 40-point games, now 30 points at least in six of his last seven.
Yeah, just mowing defenses
down. Yeah, just in, you know, part of it, I mean, you look at a game like this against the Rockets, they're already down Christian Wood, they're down Alperen Şengün as well. They're playing Daniel Tice, who's always had trouble against Embiid and is kind of Houston's third-string center at this point, and they're playing Jae'Sean Tate as second-string center, maybe, or KJ Martin, whatever you want to call it there. So it's a tough matchup, but most teams are tough matchups for a guy like Joel, who can handle the ball this well now, who moves so well, his size is uber strong, obviously at 7'2", 280. So like, yeah, you can say some of these games are mismatches, but like, that's who Joel is. Basically every game is a mismatch. So just really, really impressed with just not only the way he's dominating, you know, when he gets deep position, but he had two or three or four transition buckets where he's moving like a 6'5" wing. The pull-up jumper was there. You know, he had a ridiculous turnaround bucket, I think, you know, in early offense in the second half. So just really impressed with his patience, you know, on plays, whether it's just keeping the ball moving or waiting until like, the double will come at him and then he'll retreat and then attack. So I think this is, you know, I don't know how many games he's played since coming back from COVID now, but I think 16 or 17, this is to me the best prolonged stretch I've seen from him in his career. Maybe at some point last year in his MVP season, but the passing, the patience, the scoring, the defense, even the screening's been really good, I think, compared to previous years for him. So he's really the total package. And I think, yeah, the Rockets aren't very good, but this was just a continuation of what he's done for the last, you know, 5.5 weeks now, really.
And I'm seeing this a lot more often in games where, you know, they'll throw it into Joel, he'll get the double team, he'll kick it back out, but then immediately continue to fight for positioning in the paint and just say, hey, give me the ball back. It's like that Jackie Moon from Semi-Pro scene.
Yeah, I mean, there was that one play against the Rockets, right, where I think he and there ended up being a foul. I think Daniel Tice, like, just yanked him out of the way because he couldn't do anything. And, like, he gave the ball to Tobias or someone, and then Tobias immediately threw it back in, and Daniel Tice had nothing to do except for just, I guess I'll just move Joel out of the way because I don't want to allow 2 points on me. And obviously, you know, Tice can do that because you get 6 fouls in the game. But
I almost thought that, like, the ball hit Daniel Tice in the face. That's why it went off like that.
I couldn't tell. Did it hit both of them? I think it hit Joel. No, someone had an audible yell that I could hear on the broadcast. But yeah, I think that's a great point, honestly, is that before he went out, during those first 9 games he played, right, they played 10. I think he sat out 1 game due to rest ahead of a, you know, 3 games and 4 night stretch. But he wasn't doing that as much for whatever reason. The positioning wasn't as deep as he'd like. And then he passed the ball out and they wouldn't look for him again. And he wouldn't fight as hard. And so, we all know that, like, Sixers guards, Sixers perimeter players have historically not been great at finding him on entry passes. But I think some of more of the COVID issue was on Joel. Not much of it, but definitely some of it to an extent. And I think he's been a lot better in that regard for whatever reason since coming back the last 5 weeks. And he deserves a lot of credit because he's just, like, you know, I think about, you know, when it really stood out, it stood out basically ever since he came back. I mean, he had, what, like 42 in the overtime loss to the Timberwolves in his first game back.
Yep.
But there was one play against the Warriors late in the game when they won that, where he had Wandus Connors-Anderson, who was a very, very good defender, but obviously, you know, he's overmatched against Joel, and, you know, Joel got about as low as you can get. Maybe he had his butt 8 inches off the ground and just sealed Wandus Connors-Anderson and had, I think, an and one or something. And late in the game, the Sixers obviously were great down the stretch, closing out the Warriors a few weeks ago. But that was just emblematic of what Joel has done over this stretch to really kind of right the ship, because pre-COVID, I thought he was incredible defensively, still very good as a passer. But post-COVID, he's been all of that plus the MVP level scoring. So a lot of that is because he's working really, really hard against guys who have no chance if he puts his back into them and, you know, gets 4 feet from the hoop. So a lot of credit to him, and it's been cool to see, and the Sixers have needed it. And that's, you know, part of why they find themselves 17-8 when Joel Embiid plays, you know, basketball for them this season, which is a very good record.
Yeah, if you're 6 foot, like, 7 and shorter and you're trying to guard Joel, you just got no chance. Just walk away. For every A+, unfortunately, we have to deal out some Fs. And Tobias, good Lord, that's bad night for Tobias. Like, 6 of 15 from the field, just all bad for Tobias. What is going on? Like, is this the punishment for, like, good Tobias last year? Is this what we're dealing with now?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, like, the entire year, I think he's been a little bit down. And whether it's, you know, he dealt with his own COVID and his non-COVID illness, so, like, you want to have some sort of understanding there. He also had a hip and a knee injury this year. So it's like something is going on, right? Like, I think he's not as good of a player independent of those things as he was last year. But there seems to be some other factors at play as well that I think at least deserve mentioning. But these last couple of games against the Nets and the Rockets, like, he is just missing so many shots around the rim that I felt like he made consistently last year during his career season. And I thought it was especially prevalent against the Nets, a little less so against the Rockets. But the bigger issue against the Rockets was he just couldn't keep anyone in front of him, whether it was, you know, in the half court, whether it was transition. He was a little bit spacey off the ball. I mean, that's always been an issue for him, but it felt especially prevalent against the Rockets. I think there was one play where he was just kind of floating, and Garrison Matthews had already hit 2 or 3 threes in the first half, was wide open in the corner, probably about 8 feet to Tobias's right. And he had no sense of, you know, going to close out on the guy who had already been killing the Sixers through the first quarter and a half. So he's missing some shots. I think he'll hit eventually, but you continue to see him pass up threes that he needs to take. You also see him miss, you know, threes that he should be able to make, right? Like, you know, if there's anyone within 1 to 2 feet of Tobias, he's just not a very good 3-point shooter, which is, you know, an issue. And so he'll figure out some of this stuff. You know, the defense, I don't feel like it's something that you're going to expect to correct, but the shots around the rim, he'll figure out. I think he'll be a little bit better, maybe defensively. I think, I think he'll move better. I think one of the issues since he came back from his own COVID issues and injuries is he hasn't moved well. And he's not some incredible mover for his size, but I think he looked more fluid last season than before he dealt with injuries and COVID and all that this season. But it's been a continuation of what you saw over the last 3.5 games against the Hawks last year. And for whatever reason, he hasn't been able to right the ship when the Sixers need him to, because and this is part of Tobias's fault, but the Sixers are down, like they're down an all-star guy who was making max money in Ben Simmons. And I'm not saying that's like anything, that's not Tobias's fault, it's not his responsibility, but like you would at least hope he could play like he did last year, and he hasn't come anywhere close. I think last year in the regular season, he was anywhere from a top 45 to 60 player and above average starter, which is a very good player. And this year, I don't know off the top of my head, but he's been demonstrably worse than that even on a per game basis. You feel the absence he's had. So some of it's just variance. Like he's going to make those shots around the rim that, you know, he's usually made the last couple of years. But some of it is just like, this is who Tobias is. He's a slow processor offensively, takes fewer threes than you'd like. He's not good shooting contested spot up threes. And defensively, even though he's good at times as a rebounder and at times rotating on the inside and can defend in the post a little bit, he's not the guy you need him to be. So
dribbles way too much is another popular problem.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you can say that, like, yeah, he was great last year, but also like the Sixers have now had Tobias for 3 seasons, basically. Right. I mean, maybe a little less than that when you go back to the trade. And I think the guy he's been this year is a lot closer to who he's been on the aggregate. And, you know, as unfortunate as it feels like last year was kind of his peak and was more of an outlier than anything else. And you can say, yeah, he was adjusting to a new role when he was with Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid. And then the next year it was a new team as well with Josh Richardson, Al Horford. And that team was just kind of lifeless with, you know, Brett Brown kind of being, you know, lame duck. But if every context you need to add some caveat as to why he's struggling, that's just closer to who he is, unfortunately. I think that's the reality. I don't think he's as bad as he's been as of late, but I think he's much closer to the player we saw in 2018-19, in 2019-20, through the first half of this year than the guy we saw in 2021 regular season, unfortunately.
Not a whole lot from Seth Curry tonight. 15 total points. He had a lot of that in the second half. I kind of just like wrote that off as, oh, he got an early foul trouble and couldn't really get into a groove until the second half.
Yeah, I didn't see. I thought he was still getting pretty good shots for the most part. Definitely found his some rhythm. I thought he was key to the Sixers having, what they score, 41 points in the third quarter. Kind of
41 in the third.
he was good there. I thought that was pretty key. You can just tell, like, you know, I mentioned earlier that I think Joel's screen setting is better than it's ever been. And I think,
yes,
you know, when he sets good screens and Seth gets into that long too, which is, you know, a bad shot for most guys. But I think Seth is probably shooting like 58% or like a few weeks ago, I checked and he was like shooting like 63% on long twos this year, which is, or 62% on pull-up twos, which is a ridiculous number. It's definitely pulled off a little bit, but like he's still probably shooting somewhere anywhere from 55 to 58. And when Joel sets a good screen on those like side pick and rolls and whatnot with Seth, that shot is pretty much money. So I didn't really think there was any issue. I think he probably ended up having like 15 and like 6 of 14. So really not an issue. Like I'm not really worried about Seth. We know what he is. He's a dang good off ball scorer with some on ball ability and has good chemistry with Joel. You can see at times he gets overextended, but you also see like late in that game against Brooklyn, he was really key. You know, whether it was just working the 2-man game and scoring himself or finding Tyrese Maxey or finding Joel, like, he's a really key player. So I didn't think anything really stood. I didn't feel like Houston did anything differently. I thought at times maybe Garrison Matthews' aggressive defense gave him some issues, but on the aggregate, he ended up having a fine night. And the way he's shot the ball since, you know, dating back to what, game 3 or 4 of that Wizards series is unbelievable. So you're just prone to some slow nights, but I didn't think anything was really an issue, for the most part against the Rockets.
Your bell ringer tonight was Joel Embiid for, you know, obvious reasons. But can we make a case for Furkan tonight? First career double-double, 24, 11, and 6, and just shooting the lights out. Like, I've been I enjoy any and all Furcon games like this. So I kind of want to give like an honorable bell ringer mention to Furcon. Like, I don't know what that bell would look like, more like a cowbell than a Liberty bell, I guess.
No, absolutely. I think because the way I don't do every bell ringer. I've probably done 70% of them this year for Liberty Bowlers. The way I try to view it, because it's similar to what I used to do when I would do report cards for the Athletic on Sixers games, I try to view it through the lens of what the standard of player is set, right? And I think given that baseline, I would say it's fair if you want to give Furcon the bell ringer, right? Like,
there we go.
Like, that's a testament to Joel, right? Like, when you have a triple double, you have 31, 15, and 10 on 20 shots. Like, yeah, I'm fine with giving Joel the bell. I'm not saying otherwise. He was the best player in this game. But I think relative to the standard that they've set this season, Furcon played higher above that. And the standard Joel set the last 5 weeks, especially, has been an MVP caliber season. But whatever you want to call it. But and some of that is because Furcon struggled, but it was really good to see because Furcon was awesome for what, the first 3 weeks of the year. And it's just been a really prolonged dry spell since. Has been better in three of the last four games. I think that's now three double digit scoring into the last four. 24 was his most points since November 6th against the Bulls. We had 25. I think everyone probably remembers that game if they watched it. He was awesome in that game against the Bulls. That was the 10th game of the year, is when they went 8-2, and then Joel was out and things started to spiral. But
waving the Turkish national flag during that game.
Maybe that's a sign of that things are starting to right. You know, Joel's doing his thing again. The Sixers have won four in a row. They're 20-16 now. Furcon's finding his rhythm. But I was really impressed with Furcon. I thought 3-3s in the first quarter. But more than that, I thought you saw him get downhill and score well, which was really key to his early season success, right? Like, he's what, 6'7", right? Like, he's not some super bulky or strong player at that size, but the size does help. And so you saw him get downhill on some ball screens, use his size to finish with 5 of 6 inside the arc, 8 of 14 overall. So as you mentioned, the 11 rebounds there. And I thought that was important too, to let the Sixers, like, I thought he was aggressive hunting rebounds and letting the Sixers get out with a ball handle lead in the break a lot. I mean, 133 points, you're going to have a lot of success there. And I thought Furcon's, willingness to attack the glass and have a ball handler ignite transition possessions was key there. So tons of kudos to him. I thought he was solid defensively too. I thought last year you saw Furcon take a jump defensively, and this year he's kind of regressed a little bit, but I thought this was a good step in the right direction. Had that nice play where he had deflection and then, was foul on the break, I think late in the third or early in the fourth. So huge kudos to Furcon. And if you wanted to find bell ringers, the guy who played, most above the standard he set for himself in a given year, then I have no issue, donning Furcon the bell ringer title in this game. I would go Joel, but I have no issue with Furcon because I view bell ringer as a very fluid, title. So huge kudos to him. And I think the Sixers need him to be a good off-ball shooter who can kind of put the ball in deck occasionally and make things happen and survive defensively. And, obviously the caveat of you're playing a Houston team that's now lost 8 in a row, was already down, Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood. But the hope for the Sixers and Furcon would be he can use his game as a springboard to, right the ship and be the guy he was last year. Kind of the guy who can hold on defensively and provide some versatile offense. And that's the guy we saw at times to start this year, but has not really been the case through 36 games. And the Sixers really benefit from him figuring things out. And this was certainly a continuation of positive play over the last week or so from Furcon.
Something I found a little bit worrisome tonight is the 63 points given up in the first half to a Houston Rockets team without two of their best players. They gave up 113 total, still won by 20, but like the playing down to the Rockets, as it seemed in the first half, that's a little red flaggish to me.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned kind of at the start that we were, I wrote that piece, about the Sixers, getting wins over the Nets and Warriors, and what they did well in those games is they defended, and that has been a really consistent theme for them. I think before Monday's game, they were 7th in defensive rating since Joel came back 5 weeks ago. So that's positive. Like, you're always going to be a worse defensive team when you're without Ben. Whatever you feel about Ben, he obviously helps them defensively. That's indisputable. But they should still be good when they have, guys like Danny and Joel and obviously Matisse and Tyrese are out, but you should still be able to put together a good defensive showing against the Rockets, as you mentioned, especially because who the Rockets were missing. And the biggest issue to me was The off-ball defense and the transition defense, they just rarely stopped a guy at the point of attack in transition in the first half, especially. They would miss a shot or they would even make a shot, and the Rockets would just drive the ball down, Philadelphia's throat and get, 2 feet from within eight feet of the rim. And then either finish inside or kick it out for three. Garrison Matthews' off-ball movement was really important. So
the Garrison Matthews game. Yeah, I'm sorry. When I saw Houston number 25 and just like, no disrespect to all the Caucasian listeners out there. When I saw number 25 at the Houston Rockets, like looking like that white guy, I was like, wait a second. Is Chandler Parsons back in the league? What the hell happened?
Yeah, in credit to Garrett, like he's had a nice year, but yeah, I think his buckets or his points for the most part were very much preventable. I mean, he had eight free throws, and I think he's a nice player, but he isn't someone who can really put the ball on the deck. And he had eight free throws, I think, because he got fouled on two threes. That's just undisciplined. And then he had some cuts for easy buckets. I thought some of that was because I thought a couple of his cuts were because Joel was playing too closely to Daniel Tice. I don't know if that was a scheme thing or if Joel just wanted to apply ball pressure there, but that's not to say Joel. I think Joel is a very good defenseman at the end. I'm just, talking about why Garrison played well.
Right.
but I think it just speaks to the inconsistency of this defense. And I've tweeted about it before, and I've had people say, they're without Matisse, without Joel, but it's a thing that happens when Joel plays. And so they've got to figure it out. And yeah, it hurts to not have your two best perimeter defenders, two guys who made all defense last year, Matisse and Ben. But again, you're playing the Rockets, who have lost eight in a row. They're without Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood. You shouldn't allow 63 points in the first half, and you shouldn't allow 113 in general. They were better in the second half, only 50. Like you allow 100 points in a game, unless the game was just played at a snail's pace, you're probably gonna have a pretty good defensive rating by the end of it. But yeah, I just thought in the first half, especially, they just never stopped the ball at the point of attack. And then in the half court, they let Garrison Matthews get loose too often, bad off ball defense. Obviously, you mentioned Tobias earlier, wasn't very good about keeping the ball in front of him. I think they foul another shooter on a three as well. I don't recall, but
it was, I want to say it was Eric Gordon, but I can't remember.
Yeah. I want to say one other guy at least. And so you foul three jump shooters, in the first half. Guys on three jumpers across two games. I think the coaches have been pretty frustrated, let alone in one half. So that's got to be cleaned up. Obviously, it helped that the Sixers, were awesome offensively because nobody could stop Joel, and Furkan was great, and even Isaiah Joe was very good. But
5 of 8 from three for Isaiah Joe, love it.
Yeah, career high and
Isaiah Joe minutes, all of them.
Tied a career with 18 points, and set a career with 5 made threes, but. We've seen the issues the Sixers offense can have, against credible teams or playoff caliber teams. And I think if this is going to be a team that has a chance to win a series, as currently instructed, I think you could say they have a chance to go deeper if they get something good back for Ben Simmons before the trade deadline. But as currently instructed, I think winning a series would be a very good goal, but it's going to have to come on the back of their defense. They're not going to play a Houston Rockets, caliber defense all the time and score 133 points. And so they've got to be better on that end of the floor. And I think they largely have been since Joel returned, but it's got to be consistent. I don't think it has been. I think that's kind of the issue. And, I trust they will be good. I think this to me stands as an outlier since Joel came back, as I said, but it was not a good showing. And it's not what you want. You want to build good habits, right? Against these bad teams. You don't want to win games, even if you do it by 20. And I don't think defensively this was a game that was the Sixers building good habits defensively.
We'll see what happens in the rematch next week when theoretically Christian Wood and Porter Jr. will be back for the Rockets. But as we saw him tonight, I think I'm going to close the post game with this. I think it'd be a fun little angle. Anything that you liked from the Houston Rockets? Like the one thing that I saw, like these guys are young and they are just running fools off the court. And I'm down with that as a young, like, House of Cards team or, like, team that's got nothing really to play for. Just run, whatever.
Yeah, I actually made a note of that in the first half. I was taking notes on both teams, and I was like, my goodness, like, Houston is just breakneck pace after every play, it feels.
Yeah.
But that was – I liked that. I liked what Jayshon Tate brought. I know he didn't make any of his threes, but he had some really nice – like, he was 6 or 7 inside the arc. Drew a couple of fouls. I liked his ability, like his footwork around the rim is impressive. He's got a little bit of a herky jerky cadence to him as a driver too. You know, Eric Gordon wasn't great tonight, but I think he's been pretty impressive this year. Like, I think, you know, he's a guy that if teams have the salary, you know, the cap space to take him on, his, you know, him and his contract on, he's a guy that could really help some teams with his ability to shoot from deep and attack the rim. And I didn't think Jalen Green was great tonight, but I also, what's impressed me with Jalen this year is, you know, he's a guy that he's on a bad team. He's the number two pick. He could just chuck shots, right? Like he could just, but he only took 12 shots. And I didn't think any of them were terrible, really. Like I thought he
challenged very disciplined for a number two.
Yeah. I think that's been impressive for him. So like, yeah. He only went 3 of 12, unfortunately, but like, and you saw like the times, like he tried to challenge Joel a couple times in the room, which is fun. But it's just one of those things where you got to put a little more meat on, you got to get a little more strength. Like he just doesn't quite have that frame to challenge Joel there. But yeah, I liked some of what they did. I think the Rockets are, you know, I think Mark Jackson mentioned on the broadcast, like he said, I know the Rockets record isn't good, but they're closer than you think. And I agree with him. And as an aside, I really liked Mark Jackson on the broadcast last couple of games that I've caught with him. He's been really, really insightful, enthusiastic and good. And that's not to say Ala isn't, but I think they're different. And I think, you know, Mark brings
the funnies. I will say
he brings the funnies. And I think he also brings he focuses a little more on like the specifics of why something happens than Ala. And I think Ala is a little more like, you know, I want the Sixers to win. And that's not to say Mark doesn't, but, and that's not to say like, not criticizing Ala, but I enjoy Mark's style. And like, there was one point where he was in the Rockets were in a matchup zone and Tom McGinnis goes, what's the difference between a matchup zone and a 2-3 zone? And he explained it in one sentence really, really easily. And I was like, that's cool. Like, I enjoy that. I know the difference, but like not everyone does. And he was like, in the matchup zone, you guard a man in a certain space. In a 2-3 zone, you just guard a space. And I was like, beautiful. Mic drop. That is a really easy way to distinguish between them. So I know you asked me what I appreciate about the Rockets, but I just wanted to give.
No, that's fine. Because that was honestly going to be my next question. So that's fine.
Because I really enjoy what he's brought. He was good in the Raptors game, too. I think I watched the Nets feed on Thursday because I really enjoy their broadcast, but I caught the end of the Raptors game live and watched it on replay as well and really enjoyed Mark Jackson's commentary there. So kudos to him. I really think he's done a good job filling in for all over the last week or so.
We're going to come back with Jackson. He's going to talk about his piece last week, Sixers wins over the Warriors and the Brooklyn Nets. Sixers win tonight, 113. Sorry, Sixers win again tonight, 133-113 over the Houston Rockets. Back in a second with Jackson Frank on the Out of Sight podcast. I'm your host, Adil Royster. Chill ride, chill vibes as always. Back in 2 seconds. All right, so we're back on the Out of Sight podcast, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, where you can get a whole litany of Vox Media podcasts. Talking with Jackson Frank, we did the post game for last night's win against the Houston Rockets, but now I want to deep dive into a piece that he wrote last week regarding the Sixers' two wins against the Golden State Warriors and the Brooklyn Nets, two very impressive wins over the tops in, well, not the tops in their respective conferences, because Golden State is, I believe, second. But at the same time, damn, those were some impressive wins. I do want to start with this, though, and it's something that I feel like we need to do going forward. Can we just say who cares when it pertains to Ben Simmons? Like, when it comes to, like, oh, the Sixers are doing well despite not having Ben Simmons. Oh, the Sixers are this, that, the other without Ben Simmons. Like, I think we can just stop doing that because I don't think any of us really expected Ben to be in the lineup this season.
Yeah, totally cool with me. I would be glad to not talk about Ben again until he's playing and the Sixers have players in place of him and all that. But yeah, I mean, you know, the Nets, you know, the Sixers beat the Nets last week and beat the Warriors 3 weeks ago. The Warriors are still first. The Nets are second. The Nets have actually lost three in a row now. The Sixers sent them in a little bit of a
They got backup and Kyrie Irving coming back, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's nice when your all NBA caliber guard can just decide to start playing because the Nets took this.
Sorry, let me reset myself after giving myself a concussion from the largest eye roll I ever did. With these two wins and, you know, how the Sixers are winning, like they had COVID issues and like, first of all, like that's more reps for like other guys that don't normally get reps. So that's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so I think, you know, I had been out for a little bit with my own illness and just asking Paul over the weekend, like, what could I do? Can I get back in the swing? And he suggested this article and I really liked the idea because I think these games do do kind of give you a glimpse into like what the Sixers could do well consistently to, you know, go from a team that was, you know, kind of right on the play-in border to a team that maybe, you know, still ends up hosting a playoff series this year. And, you know,
I found a playoff series. Whoa.
I mean, they're two games out. And I know every team's had, injuries and COVID issues. And I mean, look at the teams right above them. It's the Cavs, the Heat and the Bucks, and all those teams have had their own, you know, unfortunate issues with COVID and injuries. But like, I think before tonight's game, the Sixers are the fourth easiest remaining schedule. And this month especially is pretty easy. Like they should, like, I'm not saying they're going to host a series, but I wouldn't be surprised if like we get into April or late March and they're within a game or two of a three or a four seed. I just think like you have Joel playing this well. You hopefully get back on track, you get healthy again. And I think in my piece, I wrote that like the Sixers have a full rotation. And of course, Matisse and Tyrese don't play. In the first game after that piece goes live. But I personally would not bet on the Sixers hosting a playoff series, but I don't expect them to just totally, I expect them to be closer to that than I do the play-in, honestly. Like I agree with that too. I think they're better than the Wizards. They're better than the Hornets. They're better than the Raptors, the Knicks, the Celtics. Like maybe this, like, I know people don't want to hear, but I think the Celtics, if they can get healthy, I think the Celtics could figure it out with Jalen and Jason. But I think they, like, the Sixers still have the best player between those two teams. Like Joel is just better than Jason or Jalen. Like it doesn't matter. Like he's just notably better than them. So like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think I'm not saying they're going to be the four seed or the three seed, but I just think they're like, I've watched enough of these teams that are in the play-in right now. And I just think they're better than them. Like I just do. And so I think the kind of the three themes that I highlighted in that article was Joel being Joel, mm-hmm. which doesn't always mean the Sixers are going to win games. Like we've watched Joel long enough to know that him being great doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win games, right? Like it's just the unfortunate reality. but then I thought another important thing was Matisse was fine offensively, very good defensively, especially against Steph in that game against the Warriors. And this part is a little bit out of their control. But both Brooklyn and Golden State didn't really take advantage of Matisse. Like the Sixers put him in their closing lineup, and teams just kind of guarded him as though he was a normal spot up wing off the ball, rather than, you know, aggressively doubling, you know, Joel when he tried to get a post touch or strongly helping off every side pick and roll with Matisse's defender.
Right. I was watching that play after play, watching that go down. I was like, wait a second. is Matisse getting a little bit too much respect? Like,
yeah,
what's
going
on here?
And I think he combined for 12 points on 60% true shooting in those games, which is like nothing, like that's not anything credible, but for Matisse, that's fine. You will take it like that.
Yes.
That's like, you'll take 55% true shooting for Matisse. Like that's 55%, I think, is league average this year. 60%, like, yes, it's only 10 shots. Like I'm not saying, but I'm just saying in those games, like you'll take it. And then the third thing was led by Matisse, really good and well-connected defense, like especially in that game against the Warriors. Like I thought it was pretty good against the Nets, and the Nets obviously were undermanned. They're without Kyrie, without Joe Harris in that game. But I think you saw good team defense. Drummond was very good in both games. I feel like, you know, defensively, going back through my notes and watching some plays, Joel was, you know, his excellent self. Danny, despite his issues, is still really, really good in help. And I know he didn't play that game against Brooklyn, but I thought he was good against the Warriors. So those are kind of the three pillars to me And the other one, I guess the Matisse thing ties in defense. The third pillar was good crunch time offense, which is really, really important for the Sixers and not something they've really gotten outside of the Jimmy Butler era when Jimmy and Joel were kind of able to blend who was the closer there, right? And so what was important when I looked back through the made shots the Sixers had down the stretch of each game was they didn't just give the ball to Joel in the mid post, which is what they've largely done, right? Through Joel's, I think it's his sixth year, right? Like the game gets late, they give Joel a post-up touch and say, make something happen. And, you know, for everything Joel is great at, you're overextending him if you ask him to do that, like that much, right? Like it's just, you probably want him as your 1B scorer, as good as he is as a scorer. And that's just a little much for him to ask. And so instead, the last couple of games, you know, especially in that game against Brooklyn, they're using Joel as a screener. They're running inside pick and rolls. They're getting the running offense through Seth, Joel, and Tyrese. So instead of Seth, Joel just being asked to do everything, make something happen from the mid post, it's okay, let's have Seth handle the ball. Tyrese is on the strong side because he's a good 3-point shooter this year and is confident and can attack off the catch. And Joel, because you're an improved screener and you can hit from mid range and you can, you know, you're a pretty solid passer these days, you'll be the big man there. So And the process was good. I thought that was important. Like, I think they're 12 of 18 over the last five-ish minutes of those two games. That's unsustainable, right? Like, you're not going to shoot that well. I think I ran the numbers and they had, like, over those 10 minutes, like 33 points on 12 of 18 shooting. Like, yeah, that's not going to happen every game, but the process was good there. Like, occasionally when Joel had a mismatch inside and he got deep position, they fed him the ball and he scored, but they didn't go to the every play. There wasn't predictability to it. This defense would just send the double and then position itself well in the weak side and then dig down well and force a turnover. And so those are the three big things to me. If I can circle back, was good crunch time offense and play calling. Joel was awesome offensively against an undersized front line. He worked hard to get deep position and get good quality shots. And Matisse was playable offensively, while being very, very good defensively. Those are kind of the pillars for them, I think, if they're going to roll with Matisse as a starter. And I don't know if they are. I don't know if they want to put Danny back in or if they want to preserve his health. I would still side with playing Danny as a starter. I think his three-point shooting and help defense is really important. But if they're going to roll with Matisse, he has to be playable offensively and be very, very
good defensively.
Like, I think he's been better the last couple of weeks. Like, I think on the whole, he hasn't been as good as he was last year defensively, but I think he's starting to find some rhythm again. And I think that's important. Like, if he's going to be your starter, he has to be the all defensive caliber player, right? He can't be just a very, very good defender who gets the steals and the blocks, but also is prone to dying on screens and over pursuing steals and blocks. Like, he has to be as good as he was last year. And I think in those two games, for the most part, he was, and that hasn't been the case most of the year, but that's important. If he's going to play 25, 30 minutes a night, he's got to be survive offensively. And some of that is outside of his control. It's based on how the defense guards him, but he's got to be that wonderkind defensively. And I think especially that was the case against Golden State.
I do want to circle back to something you were saying about like crunch time and seeing how much variance there's been in the offensive sets. And I got to ask, with this construction that they're doing in crunch time and different things they do with pick and roll with Tobias or like Embiid, Seth and Maxi, as you were saying, or even like, what the hell, Thibault as an entry passer, which what the hell, is this the most variance we've seen in a Sixers crunch time lineup?
I feel like I'd have to probably go back and look at kind of the stuff they ran when Jimmy was here, when they really found their stride. In the second half of the year, you know, when they had that win against the Celtics, they beat the Warriors on the road in that year with Jimmy.
Yeah.
I think Clay might have been out, but that game was incredible too. Down the stretch, I'd have to go back and watch some film there, but it certainly feels better than last year. Like if you're just looking at the Doc era, it feels a lot better. And I think
1,000%, I agree.
I think because they figure out that, oh yeah, Seth is more than an off-ball shooter. Like, he's not just a dribble handoff guy; he can actually run side pick and roll. And some of that is based off his breakout in the playoffs. And then also Maxi is just a much better player than he was last year. And, you know, even though Tobias is struggling this year, like, he saw that really nice play, I think late in the Brooklyn, maybe 4 minutes left in the Brooklyn game. Joel set a screen for him. They forced a switch, got LaMarcus Aldridge on the perimeter, and Tobias, despite his issues, still has better foot speed than LaMarcus Aldridge, and, you know, tacked him off the dribble and got to the rim for a finish. So I would say at least during the Doc era, absolutely. Again, I'd have to go look at the Jimmy era and say for certain, but you know, it's different. It's different context, right? Like, they don't have anyone close on the perimeter who can initiate offense and create like Jimmy Butler could. So different context, but definitely feels better than last year. And I think that's important. Like, you want to keep Joel involved, but he doesn't have to be the only guy. He doesn't have to set everything up, right? He doesn't have to be the scorer, the playmaker, like the screener. Doesn't do all of it. Like,
and be the best defender on the floor.
Yeah. And go and anchor the paint, and then at times go and hedge on ball screens as well. So or trap all that. Yeah. But yeah, that's been most encouraging to me. And I think some of that is also tied to Joel, right? Like if they're going to run ball screens if they're going to run the classic, they put two guys at the elbow, they run a horn set, Iverson cut for Seth Curry into a side pick and roll. If that's where they're going to go to a lot in crunch time, Joel's got to set really good screens. And I think for a lot of the time he has this year, but we also know that Joel is inconsistent at that, or he hasn't always timed his roles well. I think back to the Minnesota game, right, where he and Maxey had that miscommunication. Joel said he rolled too late and Maxey thought he was going to roll and he threw the pass and it went right to Minnesota. So that's not to say that like everything falls into Joel. I'm just saying, like, if they're going to run the offense this way rather than all a bunch of mid post touches, it constitutes Joel being a very good screener and a mid range shooter. And
Joel's got to do all the little things now, as opposed to just like one or two things.
Yeah.
Really
yeah, exactly. But if everything doesn't fall on his shoulders, the things that do fall on Joel's shoulders, he has to excel at. And in those two games, he's been awesome. And I think he's been awesome for, largely been awesome all season in crunch time and in general. So by no means am I saying he hasn't been, but I'm just noting that, you know, when his responsibilities change and if they narrow a little bit, he has to be great at those things. And he has been in these two games that we're discussing. And that's why they emerged victorious. So I'm curious to see how it goes moving forward. I think also the Sixers have been pretty good in crunch. They were, I mentioned kind of at the start of that article, I didn't get into it, but like Sixers also have wins against the Bulls, like two of them.
Like
those games matter. The Bulls are 25-10 now. They are two games clear of anyone else in the East.
Yeah. Two games against winner of the Eastern Conference December Player of the Month. Yeah, we got two wins against you, my guy.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, and I think if I recall, at least in one of those games, Sixers crunch on offense was pretty good. Like, I might at some point go back and look at maybe the last 5 minutes of each of those games and kind of see what I noticed. But like, I am curious to see moving forward against other, you know, games against good teams, what the Sixers crunch time offense looks like, because they played some good teams, but a lot of them came without Joel, right? I mean, they haven't been close. Like, they played the Jazz a couple of times, one without Joel, one with Joel, and it wasn't really close down the stretch. They played the Bucks without Joel, and, you know, it was a good game, but like, I'm just not interested in like what the Sixers crunch time offense looks like without Joel. Like, it just doesn't really matter for the playoffs. So it's something I'm going to continue to monitor, but those two games I think are encouraging. But the results, obviously, because you get wins against good teams, but the process, I think, was pretty good, even if they're the beneficiaries of a little bit of outlier shot making, but it doesn't diminish the process. And that's really important when you apply it to a forward thinking lens.
I'm going to put two little things together, and this is going to be the last, you love to call them pillars, so I'm just going to do that. defense. I love the fact that they are still top 10 defense since JoJo's return. I believe he said they were seventh. And then the schedule is looking very nice right now. The fourth easy schedule left, just January alone. And we'll just start with January. Aside from the Miami Heat, they don't have one game against the top four in either conference. I'm pretty sure now is the time to like feast and gain some ground with the roster that you have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, even that game against Miami in what, a week or two? I don't know. It's sometime in mid-January. Like,
it's the 15th, I believe.
Okay. So yeah, so a week and a half roughly. Miami has been going through some COVID stuff. We'll have some of those guys back, but they probably won't have Bam Adebayo back. They're probably going to start, you know, a Dwayne Dedman, or, you know, I don't know if he's going to be back. They might start Omar Yurtseven, and it's really cool he's in the NBA. But I've watched enough of him in the Heat this year. He's not a rotation caliber center, at least based on his play this year. No disrespect. So obviously, like I said, like Joel playing well does not just guarantee a win, but it helps when, you know, the Heat's All Star center won't play, and even his backup, who's been very good, might not play. But this is absolutely the time to make up some ground. I think so. After today, now they're down to the sixth easiest remaining schedule. Obviously, when you play the 10-27 Rockets, that game gets removed from your schedule.
They play them again next week.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying, like, that when that game gets taken off of the remaining schedule, you're gonna go drop down a few tallies in the easier schedules remaining. But I think they've got to build some continuity here, and I think they can. I mean, you look at their last three wins. They won four in a row. The game against the Raptors wasn't really encouraging. They won, but like, they should have beaten the Raptors by more, who were without, you know, without Fred VanVleet. And I think a couple other guys were still out. But, you know, the game, they blew out the Wizards. I guess, again, the Wizards were undermanned, but like, they did what they were supposed to. And they beat the Nets. Yes, the Nets were undermanned, but the Sixers are still without some guys. And so on the road, that's a good win. Then you blew out the Rockets. Like, these last three games, you're like starting to find a little bit of continuity. You're starting to starting to take care of it. Like, I'm not saying they should have beaten the Nets, but I'm saying like they're winning games that like they should be able to win. And the couple of them, they're beating them easily. So, I mean, you would hope that they come out, you know, fresh and ready against a Magic team that has had, this Magic gave the Sixers big issues, what, 5 weeks ago? I think that was Joel's second game back. You'd hope that, you know, the Magic have had some scrappy games. They just almost beat the Bulls tonight. They almost beat the Celtics, despite all the Celtics issues. I know Jalen or Jason wasn't playing, but they've had some games where they've pushed some teams. So you would hope you go out and win that game by 18 points. And then they play the Spurs. And the Spurs have been better as of late, but the Spurs are still a team that are well below 500. You would hope you win that and win by 14. So You just want to start to build some momentum and get this team back to the caliber it was in their first 10 games. And I think they can. I really do. I know that some you can look at the good their net rating, the Sixers net rating, you can look at their projected win loss. I don't really care about that with any team this year because of how wonky everything is.
Right.
I think the team is very good with Joel. They're 17-8. Joel is playing like an all NBA guy, or sorry, an MVP caliber guy, like a guy who could play. Like, I don't think he's going to because like there's been so many awesome players this year, but like he's playing that guy who could, who was as good as he was last year when he finished runner up. And so when you're 17-8 with that guy, Seth Curry's good, Tyrese Maxey's good. I know Tobias isn't going to be, I don't think Tobias is as good as last year, but he's still a good player. I think when he figures it out, Danny Green's good. They've got a decent bench. Jordan Yang is good under him. There's a good team led by a superstar. Despite all the issues, I think this team is very good. And this is, this schedule presents an opportunity this month, especially to rattle off some wins. Like I think I was kind of trying to project it for, and I think this is a team that like they should have like 23, 24, 25, 27 wins by the end of the month. I would have to go back and look at it immediately, but like, you've got to rattle off some wins here because, you know, they've still got a couple of games against the Suns, a couple of games against the Bulls. We know they've already beaten the Bulls twice, but the Bulls 27-10. Like that's not a pushover game.
Just bring it on, Chicago. Let's go.
Two against the Bucks, three against the Heat. Like, you know, like their schedule is, yes, it's easier compared to most teams around the league, but you've got to get ahead of the eight ball, right? Like you've got to win the games you're supposed to. And I think the Sixers have a really good opportunity to build some momentum here and kind of figure things out. And I think they will. I really do think they're starting to kind of like, I didn't love tonight's game, you know, from kind of just looking at the quality of this team, but they won by 20. The offense was really good and Joel was awesome. And I think it's still a game that you look back on and say they were fine. They did what they were supposed to for the most part, even if the defensive consistency was not what you wanted it to be. So I don't know exactly where I was going to end this, but I think the Sixers are starting to figure things out. Like I said, 17-8 with Joel Embiid. They've got good players around him. I think the most important thing is that he and Tyrese Maxey are starting to learn how to play together offensively. And
gotta love that.
That's really, really important. You saw how good Maxey was when Joel was out, and you saw how much he kind of struggled when Joel came back. And if they're starting to figure it out, because I think Maxey is a guy who's playing, you know, not all-star level, you know, when Joel is out. I don't think he was quite there, but a guy who was an above-average starter. And if you have
he's somebody that'll be in the freshman-sophomore game, probably.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm just saying, like, if you have an above-average starter, right? Like, I mean, that's what he's been at, I think, you know, for stretches this year. And if you can figure out how to tap into that when your MVP-caliber big man is on the floor and playing games, you're in a good spot. So there is ample opportunity this month for the Sixers to build some momentum. And I think they will, but I can't say for certain because they still have games where like the first half against the Rockets or even games against the Raptors. So there's an opportunity here, but it's also up to them to make it happen because as cliche as it is, you don't just get handed things in the NBA because these are all very good players. And the Sixers have shown this year that for better and for worse, right? That's the case, right? They've had some games where they've scrapped their way to wins despite having a bunch of guys out. And they've had games where they've lost games despite the other team having guys out or had games be too close. So big time opportunity this month and especially the next week or so to really kind of distance itself from the plan. But it's now up for the Sixers to do so now.
Jackson Frank, NBA columnist, Liberty Ballers colleague, abolitionist, anti-imperialist. I'm just reading off your Twitter. I'm sorry. You can read Jackson's Bellringer piece and his piece about the wins against Golden State and Brooklyn last week. Catch up with everything on libertyballers.com. Follow me on Twitter at @AdilBRoyster. You can follow Jackson on Twitter at @JackFrank_JJF. That's his handle, folks. I don't know what to say. Jackson Frank, appreciate you coming on, and I will talk to you soon, my friend. Stay safe and enjoy the rest of your quarantine, and hopefully we'll get you out of the safety protocol since you're out of the health ones.
Absolutely. I'll be out of here, I think, after Wednesday's game. I'll be good to go. So if the Sixers need me, don't give me a call, honestly. If anyone don't give me, I won't help you at all. I can maybe if they lose some coaches, which I don't want to happen, but then I could help. But player, I will be no help. I'm 6 foot, 160 pounds, sopping wet. I won't give you anything. I will be just another ball handler who struggles against perimeter pressure. So I won't give you anything.
Yeah, you can find Jackson and I at your local playgrounds, local YMCAs. LA Fitness, whatever. Just not on the floor of the Wells Fargo Center. Unless there's some cool opportunities for like a Sixers beat writers game, but we'll talk.
Yeah. As long as the context, right. That's NBA guys. No, I will look worse than anyone has ever looked on an NBA court, but throw me in a game with some media folks. I think I would do fine. I wouldn't say I would dominate anything, but I would be fine in that context. But
oh no, I would absolutely dominate a media game. Just like, yeah. Keith Pompey, come at me. It's fine. Whatever. No, I'm kidding. I love you, Keith. I'm just joking. That was the Out of Sight podcast for January 4th. We're going to get out of here. Sixers win by 20 against the Houston Rockets. They'll run it back next week. I am your host, Adil Royster. Chill Ride, Chill Vibes. Thank you to Jackson. Thank you to all of our listeners out in Sixers Twitter. And talk to everybody next week, and go Sixers.
Support for this show comes from Pendo. Pendo improves the apps your customers and employees rely on. Whether you're building applications for customers or managing applications for employees, Pendo can help deliver better experiences for your users so they can get more value from your software. Pendo also provides AI-powered product analytics that fuel in-app guides to deliver personalized guidance to customers directly inside your app. Visit pendo.io/podcast to learn more about how your team can use Pendo to start building better digital experiences. There, you can also check out Pendo's lineup of free certification courses, 12 hours of in-depth training for your product management teams on topics from AI to product analytics to product-led growth. That's pendo.io/podcast to learn more. Pendo. Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.